Welcome to E-commerce Made Simple, a podcast created by Adjust Media. Each week, we invite e-commerce entrepreneurs like you to share their stories and backgrounds on how they've achieved success in their e-commerce business and the lessons that they've learned that will make your e-commerce journey as simple as possible. I'm your host, Uri Weinberger. In this episode, you'll learn why tailoring your unique selling props based on marketing channel is pivotal, why being founder forward is beneficial to your business, and how running a live sale event may accelerate your growth exponentially. Joining us today, we have Lisa Matam, founder and CEO of Sahajan. Sahajan is Canada's leading clean, clinically proven skincare and hair care brand based on the ancient Indian science of Ayurveda. Founded in 2015 and boasting seven-figure revenues, thank you so much for agreeing to join us today.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
Us as well. So I just introduced Sahajan as an Ayurvedic skincare brand. Can you elaborate and educate us on what that is and how you got started?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Hopefully this is a long podcast. No. What is Ayurveda? Maybe I'll start from how I got started and then I'll tell you a little bit about Ayurveda because they all kind of go hand in hand. But so my background is I previously worked in pharma and then I was a consultant for a number of years. And then I came home and my daughter, who was almost three at the time, had gotten into my skincare while I wasn't home. She had it all over her face and her arms and everywhere, like super, super thick, the way that kids play with things. And I remember looking up at her and, you know, feeling like that she was super cute. But I remember also feeling a number of other things, like one of them being like, oh my gosh, it's probably $1 million on your face. But also thinking like, what are the ingredients for my skincare going to do to her young, beautiful skin? And I think many people, when they're parents, almost in some ways they're a little bit more, particularly when it's your first child, you're a little bit more
cautious.
Conscious. Yeah. You're much more conscious. You do things for your kids that you wouldn't do for yourself. Like, and so I remember saying to her, like, you can't play with this. Like this might not be very good for you. And so I took her to her room and I said, if you want to play with things, these are the things you play with. And there were these little bottles that I had in her room of oils, particularly that my parents had brought back on a recent trip from India. And it was in that moment that I sort of had so many thoughts in my head. But one of them was, if my skincare wasn't good enough for her, then it likely wasn't good enough for me. And if this is what, you know, from an intuitive perspective, like on gut instinct, I'm like, this is what I trust. Did I need to go back here? And it sent me on a bit of a journey because there were a lot of experiences I had growing up as like a daughter of new immigrants or, you know, first generation Canadian, experiences of my parents oiling my hair or putting turmeric on pimples and that kind of stuff that I really associated to the Indian culture. I really associated to family tradition. And on this journey, I realized it was quite steeped in this science that was Ayurveda to your original question. And so Ayurveda, translated from Sanskrit, means the science of life. It's a 5,000-year-old science from ancient India. It's essentially it predates sort of what we consider to be medical science. And it was the science of longevity. It was the science that the royals of India used to stay young and beautiful. You know, if you've ever had lemon and hot water in the morning, if you've ever had a turmeric latte, or I think they're called golden milk lattes now, if you've ever had any of those things, those recipes all come from the world of Ayurveda. And in there are these gorgeous, time-tested, plant-based recipes for beautiful skin and hair. And so as I was going through this process, I was like, oh, this feels right to me. This feels intuitively right to me. And I thought, oh my gosh, like, why did it take me so long to get here with my skincare, this concept of going clean? Because this was, you know, we're talking a number of years ago. And I thought, you know, I've always been on a little bit on this continuum of wellness. I was an early adopter to yoga. I was a fitness instructor through school. And I was like, you know, it's because when we buy skincare, we buy it for results first. We buy it because we're worried we look tired, we look dull, we look whatever, like we're getting old, whatever it is that our concern is. And everything else is sort of the cherry on top. So I thought I could take this old world science, you know, I believe it to be true, and I could prove it in modern science. I had grown my career in pharma. And so that's basically what we did. We set out to create an Ayurvedic skincare line. We worked with two Ayurvedic doctors in India on the initial formulations. And I wanted it to be true to the science, but I wanted it to be true to the science of Ayurveda, but I wanted it also to deliver against any conventional products. So I worked with like a former chemist from GlaxoSmithKline who helped create the initial collection. So it was a big journey, but it was a good one. And it was one that I felt really passionately about.
Is this something that is a brand new path for brands, or do Ayurvedic skincare brands exist in India, in Southeast Asia? Or is this something that's like, Lisa, you truly believe this, you grew up in the culture, you believe in the natural science of health and wellness, and you just wanted to ingrain that into skincare?
Yeah, great question. So, you know, my first thing, as all people do, is they Google. And so there are amazing brands in India, in Sri Lanka, sort of in like Southeast Asia as well. But I, at the time, couldn't find anything really in North America that was available. I don't know the right way to say it. Like, there were some really beautiful, I'll call them brands that were beautiful, but maybe they were only available in a local spa, or maybe it was created by the founder and packaged by the founder, but not necessarily accessible in a modern way. And so, or in a way that the rest, you know, that we all, that we typically shop, like if you're not finding it either at a spa or at a farmer's market or something like that. And so that was one of my things, was to be able to see Ayurveda in this accessible kind of larger mass way. So we were one of the first brands to do it. Actually, at the time, I worked on the brand for 2 years before we launched. And at the time that we launched, there were a couple of brands actually launching at the same time, all kind of founded in Ayurveda with different perspectives. I really took this like high science, clinical science, because that was my background, that approach. And then as we've grown, you know, there's been some shifts in the market, but we're continuing to see Ayurvedic brands really start to find themselves in the industry, in the category across North America specifically. And I think that's a testament, one, to the diversity of North America, that when you have people who come, whose parents come from all these different countries, they bring with them, you know, the richness of their heritage. And I also think it speaks to just the way in the West, we're embracing so much of what's outside of our borders. And I think particularly for Ayurveda, being a sister practice of yoga, it's such a natural launch for people. You know, they're already maybe practicing yoga, maybe they're meditating, and all of those things are part of the Ayurvedic practice. So it's a natural extension of wellness, which is like our sort of zeitgeisty obsession right now.
Yeah. Wow. So you mentioned that it took you about 2 years from, I guess, ideation to launching an
A little bit longer, actually, if I do the math, but yes.
What was involved in that outside of the traditional like source ingredients and packaging and whatnot? Like, were there regulations that were involved with? I don't know if this particular industry is regulated at all. Like, you know, you say it's clinically proven. Did you have to go through specific trials? What did that process look like?
So I'll start by saying I wouldn't recommend my process to a new founder but my process, I think, speaks to a little bit my personality and speak to my background in pharma. And so when I had the idea, I launched into it pretty quick. I was also 9 months pregnant when I had the idea. So
You
know, 6 weeks post delivery, I was like, okay, let's start working on it.
You had one baby. It was time for another one. Or 6 weeks.
Yeah, Lisa. Actually, it's funny because I remember, so I didn't come from the industry. And so what I didn't know, and it's more available now than it was back then, is that because there's so many now indie beauty brands, there are these small manufacturers that will help you or willing to work with you as you launch a brand. I didn't know how to do that. And so I started searching in my pharma network and was able to get introduced to this consulting practice that dealt mostly in pharma, and they were doing clinical trial work and a lot of bringing new products to Canada. And it, on their team was this formulation chemist. So I started to work with him, and we started very base science. Like, we, you know, in a smart way, they sent me, I remember going with a stroller to Sephora and like walking around and looking around, because they were like, well, what do you think the first couple of products should be? And then we sourced the two Ayurvedic doctors. It was a very pragmatic approach, but, you know, we rented time at a lab and actually created the first sets of formulas all at the bench. And so that kind of stuff doesn't typically happen anymore, because it is an amazing process, but it takes time. Whereas now you can work with these great indie manufacturers who have chemists on site you can come to, and they can kind of cut down the process. Because again, I was working with a formulation pharma chemist. So we were deep in clinical papers and things that I think were helpful to my process, but you can really curb and shortcut some timeframes when you're working with a cosmetic chemist.
Do you think that those resources existed and you just were them at the time, or did they pop up afterwards?
I think a lot of them popped up afterwards. Like, I look now in the indie beauty community, there's even I read a bunch of trade things every morning, and one of them is the Beauty Independent, which really looks at indie beauty brands, and that didn't exist back then. And so now there's an incredible, I'm based in Toronto, there's an incredible indie beauty community, but I didn't know anyone. And so that's part of it. But also, like even from when I started, just the exponential rate at which we're seeing brands enter the market, I think what's also fallen from that is now there are smaller manufacturers available. There are independent chemists available. You can Google. Like I Googled because Google's often your first source of everything. And back then I remember looking for formulation. It was hard to find, but now you could go Google all of those things and they're accessible. So I don't think it was as readily available as it is now. And then to your point about the regulations and cosmetics, I assumed it was more regulated than it was. So I took this pragmatic approach thinking, you know, once we get to our final thing, I'm going to have to submit some sort of paper documentation on this product, which wasn't exactly like that. We're more regulated right now in Canada than we are in the US. So in Canada, you do have to submit a Health Canada notification that has your formulation and explains that you're going to be selling this product. In the US, that process isn't quite there yet, but is coming now due to a lot of advocacy in the cosmetics world. We'll see a lot tighter regulation coming, but at the time that wasn't there. And so I think, you know, my process was a great one for me. It helped me really nail down the science, really validate what we were doing. And then to your point, it was post-launch that we started doing some clinical work. And so when I say clinical, it's like when you go to a department store or you go to Sephora or Ulta or Shoppers Drug Mart, depending on where you are, and you see something that says 87% of people experience this. It's not a self-evaluation. It's like when they go and measure the fine lines, they go and measure redness, or they go and measure the luminosity of the skin. So they're true clinicals because they're measurement-based. And so we started embarking on those because I wanted to show people we could stand up against, you know, against any conventional product. And that was relatively unheard of in the clean world back then. Now we're starting to see more clean clinical brands. We're starting to see clean brands who are diving into clinical. And it makes sense because ultimately, at the end of the day, we're investing in things that work and we want to know the sciences behind it.
Do you find that your consumers are really interested in buying a brand that is also clinically proven? Or is it more so like, hey, I really resonate with the image of what this one skincare brand or beauty brand is putting out there. And so that's why I'm purchasing them. And they don't really care as much about the clinicals.
I think it's a combination. So we did a customer survey actually in November. Where we wanted to hear from our customers, everything from, you know, what we're doing well, why they choose us, what we could do better, what they want to see in our pipeline. And one of the things, you know, that came out far and away was the number one reason people purchase from us is the quality. But the next question is why do they first choose us? And I think it depends on where they find us. So we launched on the shopping channel, and the shopping channel, as you can imagine, is an environment where you're quickly explaining the products. It's imperative, actually, and to me in that scenario, to have clinicals, because if somebody can't touch, feel, smell a product, they need to know as they're watching, like, I know this is going to work. So they want to see the clinicals. So in that scenario, I think those clinicals and the story become the reason to purchase. I think if somebody is finding us online through something like performance marketing, the clinicals are sometimes, you know, a pull. Sometimes it's actually the validation that we've gotten in press. Sometimes it's the story. It really depends, I think, on where they find us, what their motivation is for to first consider us. But what we hear time and time again is the reason people come back is the actual results that it delivers.
It makes sense. So really, like, depending on which channel and medium. I presume there's a wide range of consumers that are buying.
Exactly. And so, like, I think, like, we used to go to the yoga show as an example. And when I would go to the yoga show, it was less important to anybody there that we were clinically proven.
For the clinic.
Yeah. For them, people would look at the back and they would read the ingredients because the clean part of it was so important when we were there. And they loved that I would be standing at the booth. And so they loved that it was like founder-based. There was a very connection community piece. Whereas, you know, as the shopping channel, the clinicals, I think, become a paramount reason to consider the brand.
Understood. So I just want to recap, I guess, where the journey began and just kind of walk through your timeline there. So you had an idea. You took about 2 years to put all the pieces together in terms of working with the formulation chemist, mm-hmm. working with the Ayurvedic doctors, getting the product to market and available and manufactured. When you launched on that day, mm-hmm. what did the catalog look like then versus what you have now?
So the catalog was 5 products, which is actually bigger than a lot of brands launch with, which I also learned in the process. But to me, I started with a collection. The collection really reflected an Ayurvedic perspective. So we had 3 face products, a serum, a cream, and eye cream, which interestingly our Radiant Serum and Nourish Creme Reese to today are our best sellers. And then we had a body oil and a hair oil. And it was only about 2 or 3 months pre-launch, I brought in our first advisor who was incredible, but he was the former head of YSL Beauty in Canada and Australia. He looked at the range and it was already established. Bottles were already purchased. Like there was no changing it. And he was like, what is like, there's no cleanser in this line. And I was like, oh, cleanser. Like, yeah, we'll get there. But he was like, but why have a body oil and a hair oil? Like it was, I didn't realize that it was counterintuitive to the way that beauty does things. But in Ayurveda, it's really about nourishing from head to toe. And so that was the approach that I took. But it was interesting because as we started to build, now we have 12 products. So we're adding, you know, the first couple of years, we stuck with what we had and really started to plant the seeds on Ayurveda and on Sahajan. And now our goal is to add 2 products a year.
Understood. So that's funny that you bring someone in who worked at a larger conglomerate, a much larger business, and they have a much different perspective than what you had.
And it's funny because I think sometimes coming from outside of an industry, the beauty is you're not confined by the box of this is the way it's always been done.
Exactly.
Which I think is incredibly helpful. The flip side is, you know, what I've learned through the process, for example, is with a cleanser is that people who are very regimented in their beauty routine often don't want to change it because they're like, my skin looks awesome. I don't want to mess with this. One of the things that they're sometimes willing to play with is their cleanser. And so that's why a lot of brands put a cleanser in their initial lineup or quite quickly because it's one that
it's almost like the anchor to get people to switch brands. Mm-hmm. It's funny. Yeah. I mean, you do touch on a really good point. Like if you're not confined to that box and you have a more authentic and different perspective and approach, I think that that's what really sets brands apart in terms of having consumers or potential customers resonate with the brand rather than like being like, oh, here's another generic brand that I could buy at Shoppers Drug Mart or Sephora.
Exactly. Right? Like, totally. Yeah.
Because all those execs have probably the same train of thought.
Well, they do. And they know what's worked. Like in one sense, they're amazing because they're data driven and they know what works and they can take one thing and plug it into another. But I think innovation and part of the reason that we see these large, you know, again, incredible Fortune 500 companies acquiring indie beauty businesses is because there's the recognition of we need innovation, and innovation comes when you're not working inside the box.
Wow, that's a really good note there. So you launched with 5 products.
Yes.
What did that launch look like? Like, how did you go to market? What channels do you opt for? It sounds like you were really large in PR and getting press at some point in the business, but did you start with that? What was that process?
I did. I started with press because to your point, it's funny. It was like we launched, but in some ways you're like, well, what is it like throwing down the gauntlet of a launch look like? Again, when you're bootstrapped, indie brand, you know, operating out of a 300 square foot office, all of those things. And so for me, it was twofold. Is one, I wanted to assert from the beginning because as I was reading and you know, one of my good pastimes is to spend a lot of time on the internet reading about what's going on in the industry or other brands. And so what I was seeing was that now we're a couple of years in, because it took me a couple of years to get to launch, that there's more indie beauty brands happening, but they cover the gamut, right? It's like, you know, incredible founders making soap at their homes, selling them at the, you know, at your local market. There's people who are getting ready to launch at Target. And so I wanted to be able to assert that this was a brand that I know has this great potential, this great future, and will sit on the global beauty stage. And so we started with going to the TIFF Gifting Lounge, which is the Toronto International Film Festival. Maybe you know this because I know you're also based locally, is that I think it's like the second biggest film festival in the world, but maybe third. Is it definitely on the top?
Behind Cannes? Like behind
France? Yeah, I think it's behind Cannes, if I'm right.
I'm not sure about the stats, but I know it's huge.
I'm not sure about the stats. It's huge, and I know it's in the top 3 for sure. I want to say it's number 2. But
it's also like the best time of the year, like midsummer.
It's also, it's like right at the end of summer, actually. It's like end of August. So, you know, they have a gifting lounge where celebrities come through basically and you gift celebrities and, you know, gives you an opportunity because press also comes through. So to your point about press, I placed high value in getting the name out there and getting it. And it was everybody from, because all these celebrities are in town, it's everybody from, you know, our local Toronto press to national press, people talking about all the new things that are at TIFF, what's in the gifting land at TIFF, what are celebrities being gifted at TIFF. And then it's meeting celebrities, which is always kind of cool because that's not something I would normally do. But celebrities are often people who are years ahead of trends because they have access. And so it was interesting for me because I would meet press and I would say, I've got this Ayurvedic brand. And people would be like, a what brand? And I'd say, I remember like being like, it's an A-Y-U-R.
You gotta spell it out.
Yeah. And then
Ayurveda, not Ayurdeva.
Yeah.
Exactly. Sure, there's so much confusion there.
Yeah. And I remember Brie Larson as an example. If you've ever seen her in movies, I was already like, oh, Brie Larson's coming through. And she was like, oh, Ayurveda, you know, I filmed a movie in India, in Kerala. And I was like, oh, that's where my parents are from. And then she was like, I actually did an Ayurvedic treatment. And so we had this big conversation. And all of a sudden, one, it's cool that we have this connection point, but also it tells me like, if she's in India having these Ayurvedic treatments, it's not so far reaching that people are going to be doing these things in a few years. And that was the experience of sharing it with celebrities. And then off of the back of that, then we did our own press events. And that was really how it all got started. I opted for press because I think it's a way to signal to people. And this was so late 2015, e-com businesses were in Canada were happening, but not really. And so I remember being at that press event and having a beauty editor say to me, you know, where are you sold? And I was like, well, we're sold on our own site. And she was like, yeah, but where are you sold? And, you know, now that wouldn't be a question, but back then it was. And so I thought, okay, I've got to go find someone to sell this product, like a retailer.
That's crazy. It wasn't even that long ago.
It wasn't that long ago, but it was such a big deal. And the good thing about press was then I could go and start to present the brand to retail, but it didn't feel like it was a complete unknown because I could say like, look, we were at the TIFF Gifting Lounge. Look, here's a picture of Tom Hardy using our hair oil in his beard. Look. And all of a sudden it's like, okay. Because I think for retailers, I think for any partner, when they meet somebody who's a new founder, there's always that uncertainty of, you know, are they in this for the long run? How stable is this company? Is this something I should take a chance on? And I think doing those things gives you some signals of credibility.
Yeah. And how did you even come up with, hey, like, I want to be in the TIFF Gifting Lounge? Like, why TIFF? Why did you target that? Like, how hard was it to get in?
So random, to be honest. I'm almost embarrassed to admit how random it was. And I had read about another skincare brand and we were in process at that time. And I thought to myself, how do I get this? Like, how do I do this? And I read, and then I kept Googling and looking for articles about this gifting lounge. And I found the PR agency that put it on and I contacted them and they actually represented another brand at the time. So they were like, we can't help you with that, but we can probably give you some information about the gifting lounge. We can't represent you PR wise, but the gifting lounge is a separate endeavor that we do. And so when I worked with a PR partner, one of the things I said to her was, can you find out if this is doable? Because it was the only, not the only thing, but like when, as I was reading, I couldn't find anything that was particularly in Toronto, such a signal and that really started to help brands get their names out. And it was super fun. It was long days. And I remember doesn't sound like it was hard, but honestly it was because you're on the whole time. You're getting there at 7 a.m. You're leaving at 7 p.m.
You have to feel your best, look the best, act the best.
Feel your best, look your best, act the best.
14 hours a day.
14 hours a day. And then sometimes, you know, someone's coming through and they're like, okay, I'll take a picture with you, but can you also put in this bag, like product for my aunt and my sister and my, you know, and my cousin once removed, and you're just like to some people, not everybody, you're giving them tons of product and you're just like, God, you know, I hope this all works out. But it was incredible. And so it was really, I had read about it and I thought it would be a great signal.
And as you mentioned, like it adds so much credibility to the brand. So once you showed up there, you get some local press, some international press. Does that translate into sales immediately?
No. Candidly, no. I remember getting our first few sales because at that time we had so few sales that if I got a sale, like, you know, I would get an email about it and I would be jumping up and down. And one of the first sales we got was from a friend from high school. And I was like, okay. And it was, you know, from the person who ran the agency who branded it was her best friend. That's kind of how it started. But we started to get like little speckles of sales. And then for, you know, the Canadian listeners, this might be more familiar, but we were listed at well.ca a couple months later. And so that helped. But what I think is interesting is one, so that was like our first place. And then the next was the shopping channel. And then in this time, a friend of mine flips me a press release that says Sephora is announcing its first beauty accelerator. and it's specifically for indie brands that are woman founded, send them an email and say, I'd like to apply. And they write back and they say, sorry, it's by invitation only. And so kind of thanks, but no thanks. And then a couple of hours later, I get another email that says, actually, we changed our mind. You can apply. Your application is due tomorrow at noon. And this was maybe like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And I was like, ah. And so I put together the application and, you know, we had to do a video and everything. And I send it in and I got in. And so, you know, very proudly part of the first cohort of the Sephora Accelerator. But what was interesting about that, and I only thought about it when you and I were talking, was I remember going to San Francisco and being there. We were there for a week and being there, so there's two times you're there, being in San Francisco for a week and, you know, one evening having a conversation with one of the people who runs the program and her saying, you know, when we were deciding whether or not to take you into the program, we saw some of your content from TIFF because we had put up a YouTube video. And I was like, see, everything sort of comes full circle. Like you don't, it's hard as a founder because I think you only have certain dollars to put certain places, but it's funny how it all comes full circle. And it's funny how that particular investment, again, I think was a very helpful thing in terms of how Sephora viewed my application for their accelerator.
Wow. It's amazing. Oh, everything's meant to be.
Yes. I know. It all seems like kismet, doesn't it?
Yeah. So PR, got into well.ca, I guess like a Canadian, not a distributed marketplace.
For the US, I think it would be like a Thrive Market or something like that.
And then they have, you get into an accelerator, and then what happens from there? Like, when do you start adding different channels into the mix, and what channels do you focus on today?
Yes. So we've changed our focus certainly since then. So the early days, we're really focused on retail. I think it was also, I was learning in the process. And so we work with well.ca. We launch at the shopping channel in Canada. I go to the Sephora Accelerator. There's an incredible retailer in the US called Credo Beauty. Credo is one of the thought leaders in the US as a retailer on clean beauty. And at the time, it was kind of the buzz that everybody, I mean, people still talk about it, but I think at the time that we launched, they launched and they had one retail location. But so many people would say to me, you should get into Credo. And I would be like, that's great. How does one do that? We post accelerator, apply to get into Credo. Again, sometimes I always like to make things about serendipity, but I'm sure there was a lot of work and good branding along the way. So we get into Credo, which at the time we launched has two locations, one in San Francisco and one in New York. It's now expanded to be a larger retailer and we've grown with them. And so the next few years become about building our online base while also growing at retail. So we launched at other clean retailers like the Detox Market. We launched with a department store in Canada called The Bay. So we had a pretty retail heavy focus. And then the pandemic hits. Now you're in 2020, retail shut down. And it's time to do the business a little differently. And I had always in that time wanted to double down on e-com. And I was doing we were doing a lot of performance marketing, a lot of ads, a lot of things like that. So at the time, you know, we were very retail heavy. And then the pandemic hits. And in some ways you can say it's time to think about the business differently. But candidly, I had been trying to grow our online sales for a long time. And we had been spending time on performance marketing. And when I say that, I mean like Facebook and Instagram ads, Google ads, but we weren't seeing the success that I think was needed. But all of a sudden stores are shut down. And I was kind of thinking to myself, like, I have no idea what the next few months are going to bring. You know, I think anybody who's operating a business in that time had so many moments of uncertainty. And we did. I'm sitting in my office right now as I say this, and I often think, you know, we didn't even, as an example, get an abatement from the office. So I'm still spending money on rent. I'm still spending money at the warehouse. We're still paying our bills, but retailers are closed. You know, some of our smaller retails, unfortunately, didn't pay their bills or needed extensions, or, you know, even a couple of them didn't make it through the pandemic. And so I was kind of forced to say, you know, how are we going to get through this? And I was going back to the drawing board. and then looking at how we were going to grow online. And so we were starting to put new strategies and do new interesting things. And then during the pandemic, the wellness editor at Oprah puts out, in their weekly newsletter that one of her favorite things to do in the pandemic is to do our brightening mask, which is this turmeric, non-staining turmeric, hemp seed oil, holy basil, kind of resurfacing, exfoliating because it's got these fruit-based acids in it. And that becomes an interesting launching platform. I use the word launching for the first time in this context of the story, but I do believe that becomes an interesting platform for us to really get the message out there during the pandemic, because it's the pandemic, people are home, they're starting to spend more on their self-care, which is something that aligns well with our brand, which is something that we've always believed in. Now we're a brand that's based in wellness, and people are worried about their health in the pandemic. And so they're starting to also look at alternative ways to support their health and everything in that wheelhouse. And they're over-indexing on skincare because they're not going out for dinner and they're not wearing makeup because, by the way, we're all wearing masks and people are starting to get maskne and all this stuff. Like, it almost created, in one of the worst times probably many of us have experienced, a crazy platform for us to start to get the brand out there, because we get this piece, people start sharing it. We start launching, some interesting ad tools against it, and the business starts to grow and people start to really engage with the brand in a new way because they're really interested in it. They're really interested in the platform. I think for Canadians, we're made in Canada. We print our boxes in Canada, all of those things. People are very committed to supporting local businesses and to supporting businesses that they know are being created, on homegrown soil. So I think for Canadians, this was a big deal. I think across, I just think it was just an interesting time for skincare. And we saw, so as an industry, I think we saw skincare start to really grow during the pandemic because everybody was home. But we got to grow at the same time because not only were people more interested in their skincare and having Zoom masking parties and doing all these interesting things, we were well positioned for that growth, and some of our previous accolades, everything was just sort of coming to life in a new way because people were at home to see it.
So pandemic hits, you're already set up for the most part in order to take all the orders, which a lot of businesses weren't at the time. And you mentioned you were struggling to grow your online sales prior to that. Obviously that all changed. And now fast forward to today, has that momentum that built throughout the pandemic, has it maintained? Mm-hmm. Is online store now, if you were to reflect back 4 or 5 years ago, like pre-pandemic, is it to a point where you'd say, hey, like, to an extent, I'm satisfied with where I'm at? Obviously you need no one's ever satisfied. Everyone's always hungry. But at the same time, like, have you achieved the goal of saying, hey, now my online sales are sustainable? It's still a focus for you, or everything's open now with retail, or you still focus on retail?
Yeah, it's a great question. So we were a retail driven brand prior to the pandemic. Now we're a digital first brand with some really key retail partners. I believe for skincare, you need both, because I think even if I think of the way I shop, like, it's nice, particularly for skincare, you so often want to be able to touch and feel something. I think also with the way a shopper shops, like, we have an incredible community, and we have hardcore loyalists who continue to come back to us, and we work really hard to give them meaningful reasons to shop from us every day. But I also acknowledge that, if I think of some of our retail partners right now, like Credo and like the Detox Market, they might be going there to get not only their skincare, but their deodorant and their makeup. And so being available, whether it's in store or online, there becomes really important. What I think continues to be a shift is that we are a digital first brand. And so it is in a lot of ways like being your own retailer, but you have to operate in the way of a retailer in terms of your own marketing calendar, or, hey, we have to switch up the banners on the site because Mother's Day is coming, and you're doing all these like new and interesting things because it is your own retail shop. And so I would say, in terms of where we're at with our online, I am happy that we've been able to sustain. I think we have an incredible opportunity to continue to grow. I feel like we've just started to scratch the surface. But what I'm proud of is, I think in that growth period during the pandemic, and then as things started to open, as a brand founder, I'm proud of the fact that we've been able to show that continued sustainability. We've been able to show that people can continue to come back. And I think as we're, yes, retail is open, but we know that this is a tough economic year. And in beauty, it's a tough year as we see a lot of indie brands that are unfortunately closing their doors for different reasons. So I'm proud of where we're at, but I think we have, you know, we have so much more to do, but I'm really proud of where we've
You're come. Like glowing and glistening when you say this. Really? Like, I don't know how many viewers are just going to listen to the audio version versus the video.
I just forgot to turn the video.
I highly recommend that everybody comes to this timestamp and just looks a smile on your face when you say
it. Oh, really? That's so funny because I actually forgot that there was a video. So I apologize because I'm not even looking at the screen because like when I get really passionate, I start like looking around the room and.
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to stand still and stare into the camera.
I know it's hard.
So that's all really insightful. And absolutely true. Like you're definitely basically running your own retail shop. You need your own marketing calendar. You need to continue to give people reasons to come back and purchase from you. What are you doing nowadays that you would say differs from a marketing perspective that gives your customers those meaningful reasons and creates community and introduces you like as the founder? And I assume you're very like founder forward. So what are you doing these days that's different than everyone else?
Yes, for sure. And I would say, I think we could be even more founder forward, but it's something that I personally struggle with. Not that I struggle with being founder forward, but it isn't in my nature to like take pictures of myself every day or, you know, sometimes the person who works with me on social, because a lot of us still work, don't come into the office, you know, she'll be like, can you take a video of yourself saying that and then saying this? And then at the end of the day, she'll be like, where's the video? And I'll be like, I didn't do it, or I look kind of crazy today, or my hair has been in a bun, so I didn't take pictures. So there's some things that we are founder forward and we're mission forward. So what that looks like to me is that Ayurveda is at the core of what we do. And as we continue to grow, what I hope we can continue to provide our community and what I'm endeavoring to provide our community is other things that support them along their journey to wellness. So one of the things we did earlier this year was we brought in very, you know, renowned Ayurvedic practitioner for a community only event. You had to RSVP to come. And she took people through sort of some of the fundamental Ayurvedic principles to get, you know, how to get through the winter with Ayurveda. So I think doing things that have nothing to do with selling, but really are about our mission become to me very important because that's why I started this, was to share Ayurveda. And then we do some other things that are, I think, a little bit more sales. Here's what I would say is like, we do things like we started doing these live scales. We do 2 a year. The first one for this year is going to be next Tuesday, by the way.
What are they exactly?
So it to me sounds like when I first heard about it, a friend of mine who's another founder, this was during the pandemic, was like, I have this great idea for you. We did it. And I actually initially refused. So what it is imagine you're broadcasting from wherever you want through this technology. And it's like you're running your own, the best way I can describe it, it's like you're running your own mini shopping channel or your own mini QVC. Where you're online, people are watching you and they're able to add to cart while they're watching you. So you could be talking, and I'm doing this for the sake of somebody's watching this because it helps me talk, but like you could be holding up the Lip Karma and talking about it and saying all these things, and maybe you're putting it on, but also on the bottom is the add to cart for the Lip Karma and you can buy it. And so it's this live sale, which having been on the shopping channel sounds really cool. But the caveat to it is that you bring the audience. And so when this founder friend of mine first suggested it to me, I was like, who is going to come, you know, on a Thursday night in the evening and want to hang out with me while I put my Lip Karma on? And so for about a year, I resisted it because I couldn't get my head around it. And then in that year, I saw some brands that I really admire, do it. And I actually paid attention. I haven't seen a lot of brands do it, but you know, some of the bigger players in Canada, like Knixwear, I saw them do a swimsuit show. Jenny Bird, which is a brand that I followed for a long time and I wear a lot of her jewelry. I saw her do one and I was like, oh, maybe I should take a look at this. And so we do our first one. So it's, I guess, a year and a half ago now. It was so nerve-wracking because this is the partner that we work with is also a startup. It's like a new emerging technology. You know, we do a couple of dry runs, but it's also a little bit of a self-serve technology. So as the founder, like you're you're the one who's hitting go and you're the one who's hitting live. And so we're sitting in my office. It's so low production. I'm sitting on the same couch that I'm sitting on right now. And, you know, my customer service lead is answering all the questions. And then our social media manager is running the slides. And then I've got a girlfriend of mine who's writing me things on a poster. Like the whole thing was just like cuckoo bananas. And, but it was incredible. And what I learned through that, it was incredible to me because the whole time we're sitting in this room and it's dead quiet for an hour and it's just me talking to the screen. So it's me saying, okay, guys, you know, the next thing I want to tell you about is our Nourish face cream. And this is why I love it. And this is why it's so great. And this is how people use it. And we did some event only pricing. And so for certain things, we were like, just for this 1 hour, this is the price it's going to be. We tried to make it fun. We did free shipping. We've done this now 4 times in the last year and a half. So we do about 2 a year. We did a giveaway. So like for the first 100 people or, you know, as people are purchasing, they get their name put in and then we choose somebody to win a giveaway. And so like I announce it online, like, hey, you know, Sue Smith, you've won this.
Oh, I have so many questions for you about this, Lisa. I have so many questions.
Oh my God. So it all happens in like an hour. And it's funny because we're doing the next one next Tuesday and I'm already can feel that like my nerves are a little up. And it's nerve wracking, but it's incredible. I was shocked by the number of people who came online with us. You know, we had an incredible evening of sales on our first night. And after we continued to do it, you know, we continued to have great sales, which is incredible. And I think it's a testament to our community. I think it's a testament that, you know, we've been blessed with being able to create a brand that people really, they want to come and they love the interactive portion of it. So I can't hear people and I can't see people when I'm doing it, but my team actually messages me if there's like most of the questions they can answer on their own. But let's say they're like consistently so many people are asking, like, can I use this to take off my sunblock? Then they'll message me and I'll say, it seems like a lot of people want to know, like, can you use this to take off your sunblock? This is the cleanser I would use and this is why. And so it's a wild night over here when we do it.
Okay. I want to rapid fire some questions because you've clearly done it.
Yeah. Do it.
I'll rapid fire and then you answer however you want to answer it. Okay.
Yeah.
How do you bring the audience? Like, what are you doing to bring the audience? Like, is it a strong turnout? Obviously you deem it successful, but like conversion rates, I know you don't know off the top of your head, but like, how do they compare to just like general online drive traffic to your store conversion rates? And then like, what would you say is the difference between running a live sale or live scale versus an Instagram live, and how does it integrate with your store differently? So this is kind of a rapid fire. It's a lot to go off of.
Oh yeah, I have all, okay.
But this is a juicy segment, so I want to hear it all.
Okay, good. Yeah. If you're into e-com and you're into growth and your brand building, I recommend this. So the technology we use is called live scale. So it's a live sale on live scale. How it integrates. So the platform that we use, and I know that I actually just got an email from them because I know they want to advance the platform that we're using, but the platform, we actually use their platform that integrates with our Shopify. And so the way that it works to one of your questions, how do we get people there, is the first thing we do is we start to notify our community. So our next one is next Tuesday. An email went out day before yesterday that says, save the date. This is coming. It's live, 1 hour, exclusive, Canadian shoppers only. We do Canada and the US separately because...
Okay, so the economics are different.
Actually, it's not the economics, it's the technology. So we can't run two currencies at the same time. So yeah, it's actually, we run the same sale. It's like, this will be the first time we do them back to back. So we'll do Canada on next Tuesday, the US the following Tuesday. And that's only because I said to the team, do you want to do it Tuesday, Thursday and get it over with? Or do you want to space it out? And not get it over with, but I mean, like, you know, how do you want to build the time? So how the primary audience is our audience. We send them an email to save the date. We send them an email the day before to say, hey, don't forget tomorrow's the day. We send them an email again, you know, tonight's the night. And then we send them the final email, which is we're live. And in each of those emails, the link isn't to our site, it's to live scale. And it's that same link during that hour, you can go on that link and you'll see the thing. But if you go on at any other time, it's just a landing page. But people can save it, they can add it to their calendar.
And does it act as like a sales channel within Shopify?
Yes. So all the orders go through Shopify.
Oh, they all go. Okay, perfect.
All the orders go through Shopify. It integrates with Shopify. It's pulling the the products through Shopify. And so to your question about whether or not it's different from an IG Live, what makes it to me specifically different is that you can add to cart. So if you're on your phone, as an example, or on your laptop, and you're watching, I know I've done this because I've watched a couple of other brands do it, and you're like, oh, I'm going to speak, you know, I've done this with Jenny Bird, but like, let's say somebody's watching and they're like, oh yeah, oh, okay, she's hearing the cream. If there are loyalists, they're like, oh, I came because I know a few things are going to be on sale and I'm going to add them to cart. But sometimes what happens is they'll hear me talk about it, or they'll understand deeper how something is used or why we formulated it or what the ingredients are. And then they're like, oh, you know, summertime's coming. And I use the example of SPF again. The only thing that takes off SPF is a cleansing balm or a cleansing oil. I'll say like, if you're wearing SPF, which we all should be, you need this to do this. And then someone might go, oh my gosh, I didn't have that in my regime. I'm just going to add it to cart right there. And they can still hear me do all these things. And while they're checking out, they're still in the process. So it's a very, I think the integration is what makes it easier. Like we could go online and I could go Instagram live for an hour and then go back to our site and you could go purchase, but there's just
way less seamless and too much friction. Yeah.
I think the other thing is, and I learned this from watching some of the other brands do it, is we try or we work really hard actually to try and add in pieces that are event only, whether it's a gift with purchase, whether it's free shipping, whether it's, you know, as I said, there is event only pricing, and we try and make it interesting. Like at some point, I think people must get sick of hearing my voice, but you know, we had the second one we ever did, my customer service lead at the time, who's amazing. We decided to make it like an evening thing. So I came in my PJs and I basically did my evening routine, like
break out the martinis.
Well, it's funny, we should have, but like she came on with me and then she put on the mask while I talked about it. And I think, you know, one of the things that's really important to me and is that I'm accessible, the brand is accessible, that people feel a connection to it that way. And I feel, I didn't expect this would be one of the ways that we did it, but it certainly is.
Wow. That's, you know, I've done a few of these interviews and I've spoken with, I'm going to say dozens, but it's actually hundreds of merchants. Never heard anybody do something like this before. So that's a really different perspective. Like we, like full circle, like you speak with a, you know, traditional e-com people and they don't know specifically to do this. And then you come in with a different perspective and a different strategy and it's deemed successful.
Yeah. And it's crazy in the sense, like part of me is like, oh my gosh, like this is like one of our, the things that I do think we do well. And so I'm almost like, you know, there's a little part of you that's like, I hope not everybody discovers it so that we can keep doing it.
I wonder if your community is waiting for it, you know, like this is going to be a staple of Sahajan, right? Like Lisa comes twice a year to sell me product.
You know what's weird? But like what's funny about it is the first email went out a couple of days ago to Signal Tuesday. And last night I still do the same thing, which is I hope people come. I hope people come. And what I always say to the team right before it starts is, you know, we're going to do a great job tonight. And I said this at the first one, so I'll continue to say it, which is like, if only four people come, we're going to do a great job for those four people. The great news is like last year we had 1,000 people come to one of them.
Wow. I don't know if you hear this, but wow.
Yeah. It's incredible, right? Like it's absolutely, and I'm so grateful. Like I think people must think I'm making it up, but like I actually like my heart, there are only a few times in this brand where I've just been I've been blown away. And every time we do it, like I go home and I've even like said to my husband, because each time I can never sleep after, and I end up staying up for a long time. And I'm like, wow, like people are amazing. Like I almost feel like they're giving me a gift. I'm like, people are amazing. Like they're just amazing.
They really resonate with it. Lisa, thank you. Thank you so much for sharing your story. There's so many inspiring and informational tidbits that you've shared with us today. And it was extremely interesting. As we close out, do you want to tell the listeners where they can connect with you or connect with your brand? And obviously everything will be in the show notes, but...
Yeah, you can find the brand. So it's www.sahajan.com. And you can find me, I guess my name will be in the show notes, but it's Lisa Matam on LinkedIn. But, you know, I really appreciate that you had me on to tell the story. You know, I get excited about these things, but you never know if somebody else will. So thank you for letting me talk about them.
Your enthusiasm has come through the screen. It's come through through the speaker and everything. So thank you very much, Lisa.
Thank you so much.
This wraps up another episode of E-Commerce Made Simple.
Each week, we find e-commerce entrepreneurs who are willing to share their successes, challenges, and stories so business owners like you can learn valuable lessons that will make your e-commerce journey as simple as possible. If you like what you heard today and would like to connect with either myself or the guests that we had on today's show, join our exclusive free Facebook community. Head on over to www.facebook.com/groups/ecommercemadesimple or simply hit the link in the show notes below. I'll catch you in the next episode.